Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. As we continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, my special guest co-host Tom Theobald and I will be joined by Jeff Anderson, the owner of California Minnesota Honey Farms, which is a commercial migratory beekeeping operation. Jeff also represents the beekeeping industry on the National Beekeeping Advisory Board and the National Pollinator Defense Fund. Today, we will be discussing the new EPA guidelines for investigating bee incidents. So first, I'd like to welcome to the show my special guest co-host, Mr. Tom Theobald. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon, June.
And our guest today, Mr. Jeff Anderson. Good afternoon, Jeff, and welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for the invitation, June.
Always great to have you, Jeff. For people that are not familiar with who you are and what you do, could you share a little bit about yourself with our audience?
I run a commercial migratory beekeeping operation called California Minnesota Honey Farms, and we operate, nowadays it's a little bit difficult to give an exact number because of the mortality rate, but somewhere in the excess of 3,000 colonies in the spring of the year. We pollinate spring crops in California, primarily almonds, but we do apple and cherry pollination in California. And then during the summer months, we bring our bees back to the Midwest and for honey production in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Can we talk about the actual guidelines? It's quite interesting that apparently there is now a special set of guidelines for bee incidents. Why is that?
That's a really good question because I've reported bee kill incidents, pesticide bee kills, several different times in the course of my beekeeping career. And EPA has a guidance document, a FIFRA inspection manual that tells our inspectors how to inspect just about anything. I mean, and as far as I know, this bee guidance document is the only addendum to the FIFRA document, and I'm a little bit surprised that they felt a need for it.
Tom, could you also interject, because you also have served as a bee inspector. Were you a bee inspector in the state of Colorado or for the county?
Well, I was the last county bee inspector in the state of Colorado. Yes.
Did they have anything like this while you were an inspector?
Well, at the point where I was the inspector was more a volunteer position, but as one of the founders of the Boulder County Beekeepers and the president of the Boulder County Beekeepers, we work very closely with both the state and the applicators on issues like the ones that are addressed by these guidelines. So my surprise is that these new guidelines focus almost exclusively on the bee and beekeeping end of the issue and focus on bee health and beekeeper management and what the beekeeper has or hasn't done. And I would like Jeff to explain to the listeners why he thinks that is and what that means both for the beekeepers and for the protection of the environment. So, Jeff, maybe you can expand a little bit on that.
Well, yeah, I think I can. EPA claims to regulate chemicals based on the science at the beginning of the registration process, but also on reports of misuses or actually unintended consequences from pesticide uses. And the way they capture that is through the use of incident reporting, which is supposed to go into the ecological incident database at EPA, the EIIS database. And so it's quite important if you have an incident. In my case, it would be a beak kill incident. I would report that. But, I mean, it's not just specific to honeybees. If you have a pesticide drift, herbicide that kills your garden, or mosquito abatement issue that causes a human health issue, all of those types of things should be reported, and then they get captured in this ecological incident database. And if there's a rash of reporting on a specific chemistry, then EPA allegedly can make corrections to the registration of that particular chemical, maybe a further restriction or an actual loss of use on a particular crop if it happens to be particularly problematic. And that's part of the reason for the reporting, and i.e. this guidance document. The guidance document is written for the investigator to help them understand how to investigate a bee kill incident.
But why is there so much focus on bee health?
This is really surprising. I mean, this is a fairly extensive document, 20-some pages long, and it does. The focus is very much on bee health, and it's kind of surprising to me that would be the case, because the reason a beekeeper would call and report an incident is something unusual went on that's not related to something that they can control. And so, therefore, their suspicion is that maybe they actually observed a pesticide spray in progress, and the bees had symptoms of pesticide poisoning, which would be, like spastic behavior and whatever. And so, therefore, the beekeeper recognizes that it's not a normal disease or bee-related virus or whatever. And so, therefore, they call and they report this incident. But the bulk of this document, Tom, is specific to what a beekeeper has done in his beehive, his actual management practices, whether he's fed pollen supplements and sugar syrup and corn syrup, and what kind of miticides he might have used for varroa mite control. They even go down as detailed as actually asking if you've put water supplements out for your bees for the year. And while all those things are important, if you were a bee researcher researching health, they seem like there's very little applicability to investigating a pesticide-related mortality event.
One of the things that I find very interesting, and perhaps both you, Jeff, and Tom can explain this not only to me but to the audience, is the fact that there are many questions that I'm not really too sure belong in here, such as EPA registration numbers, active ingredients, EPA producing establishment registration numbers, distributor names and addresses, as well as other information that, in my opinion, seems as though that should be information ascertained by the applicator, not the beekeeper. Why is that?
Well, that's a really good question. In my opinion, I mean, my observation as a commercial beekeeper is this document is intended to more or less squelch the ability of the beekeeper to report an incident, because in many states, for instance, in Minnesota, where I summer my bees, pesticide application records are private, non-public. And so I can go and ask an applicator what he applied, and he or she may decide to tell me what they applied, but they do not have to. They're not required to by law. And so if I don't, if I see a spray event occur and I see mortality in my bee yard, the first problem is I have to track the applicator down to get that information, and then whether or not they're willing to let me have that. And most people don't know what the EPA registration number is. I mean, if you have the foresight to ask the applicator for the actual label of the product he applied, then you'd have that information. But most people in the public have no clue that there is such a thing as an EPA registration number. And you're right. This is information that the investigator should be asking an applicator for, not a beekeeper. The other thing I find of interest is the document is written in a way where if the beekeeper does not have this information, it has an out for the investigator to to terminate the investigation based on the lack of information, which is kind of a convoluted way of running an investigation. Ask the damaged party who hit you, and we don't have a clue.
The beekeepers that I've spoken with generally feel that these guidelines have been written in a way so that the blame can be put on the backs of the beekeepers, and there's very little emphasis on the responsibility of the applicators for safe use of these pesticides. Could you comment on that, Jeff?
Well, yes, because I think where I would take that to is the violation of that caused a bee kill incident. I mean, the violation is actually the application of a pollinator toxic pesticide on a blooming crop where pollinators are visiting and or foraging. That's what the violation is, because the bee hazard statement says do not apply this or allow it to drift to blooming crops or weeds, and some of the statements vary a little, but that's the crux of what they say, and so the actual violation of the label is the presence of a pollinator toxic pesticide on bloom, and the dead bees are only, in my opinion, are only evidence that a violation occurred.
Tom, could you also expand upon the information that they are asking for and what your opinion is as far as the relevance and if the responsibility should be put on the beekeeper as opposed to the applicator?
Well, we've obviously the beekeepers have talked amongst themselves about these guidelines quite a bit, and we've used the analogy of an automobile accident. If you were to run a stoplight and kill someone, it seems to be strange that you would be asked what the maintenance history is on your vehicle, how recently you changed the oil, whether or not you had checked the radiator recently, and then the question is, if an autopsy shows that pedestrian that you killed had some terminal illness, does that then absolve you of any responsibility for that death? And that's the philosophy that seems to be coming through in these beekeeping guidelines, that there's a strong effort to prove that the beekeeper has done something wrong, that the beekeeper has killed their own bees, and legally a beekeeper can kill their own bees whenever they want to. The issue is whether pesticides are present and whether the pesticide laws have been violated, and it seems that these guidelines completely ignore that element of the law.
Thank you. My next question is actually for both of you. Jeff, I'd like you to begin. Can you explain exactly how much information was contributed by the commercial beekeeping community?
Well, it's interesting that you would ask that, because we have a number of beekeepers that are regularly in Washington at EPA, particularly with the Pesticide Program Dialogue Committee. And the bee industry became apprised of the fact that this document was in process of being produced in the hall conversation at that meeting, at which point we contacted the people that were involved in the construction of it and specifically asked us if the beekeeping industry could have input into that, because it was going to be a document that would more or less regulate our industry, and EPA claims to include stakeholders in discussions that involve their industries or whatever. And so the bee industry was basically told that no, that the state lead agencies, particularly in Region 5 EPA, was the ones that put this document together, really weren't interested in our input. And so what we did is we put together kind of a beekeeper wish list of what we think an investigation should look like and submitted that to EPA. Very little of that we see in this document. So not only were we not invited to help advise how this might look, we were pretty much ignored. What we did say was pretty much ignored in the construction of this.
Yes, I think it was even worse than that. We interviewed Darren Cox, who's a Utah commercial beekeeper, and he's been involved at the national level for the past several years. And Darren was the chairman of the PPDC enforcement work group, specifically set up to deal with these kinds of issues. And Darren told us in his interview 2 or 3 weeks ago that they never were approached. They were simply excluded from the development of these guidelines. So that's of great concern to the beekeepers, that these collaborative efforts seem to be more smoke and mirrors than substance.
Jeff, could you talk about the actual incident reports and why it's more of a disincentive for beekeepers to proceed with the reporting process and let the EPA know what's going on?
In response to that, I think what I'm going to do is actually kind of bullet point some of the things that are requested of the beekeeper at an inspection like this. Starting off with, I'll just kind of go down the list right out of the guidance document here. They want to know the last time the beekeeper inspected. I mean, that's a pretty standard question and probably a legitimate one. But the very second thing here is collect relevant information on the general health of the beehives. Well, I mean, you're reporting a pesticide incident. Obviously, the health of the beehives is not going to be all that good depending on how severe the pesticide incident is. And they follow that up by noting the strength of the colony. And they want to look at brood patterns and whether they're queen right, and note signs of disease and parasites. Well, I'm not sure if I have a colony with American fowl brood that had a pesticide incident, I'm not sure what the disease American fowl brood would have to do with the mortality event.
Yes, we're back to the traffic violation incident metaphor.
Okay. And then the next thing they want to ask the beekeeper is they want our records of when we treated hives, because beekeepers, unfortunately, a lot of us are pesticide applicators. In recent years, we've gotten exotic pests like varroa mites in our colonies that we have to suppress. And so they want records of when we treated. A beekeeper would be kind of, to me it would seem kind of convoluted for a beekeeper to have applied a miticide that caused a bee mortality event and then report it, unless he was worried about the actual active ingredient being toxic to his bees. And you know, I mean, that wasn't why, I mean, if I have an outside pesticide, I mean, a pesticide application that caused my mortality event and I didn't cause it, you know, to me, whether I treated for varroa mites 3 months prior really is kind of irrelevant. So, but it gets even more interesting than that, because they want to know the last time we had bees in transit. You know, I mean, if you've followed the CCD thing in the news, one of the things they talk about is migratory bee stress. And so I'm not sure how migratory bee stress, for instance, in my case, I'd haul the bees back to Minnesota in May, and I get a pesticide spray thing on soybeans in mid-July. I'm pretty sure that the transit has little to do with it, but they want to know the last time I had bees on a truck. They want to know last time I removed honey from the colonies. They want to know whether the colonies were inspected in other states. I mean, we can go on down the line, and they go as far as on the mite issues. They want us to be able to supply the product name and the EPA registration and actually have a label available for them for the miticides that we applied to our hives. I mean, obviously, when we're making the application of the miticide, we're required to have labels available. But we're talking months after the event, they want us to be able to come up with receipts for sale and distribution. To me, this is way over the top. And I think Tom's analogy is correct. I mean, they don't ask these things of the commercial spray applicator, but they do of the damaged beekeeper.
What exactly do they ask of the applicator? Do you know?
Well, they have a standard form in the FIFRA inspection manual. No, I really don't know because I'm not a commercial applicator and have not been approached from that way. But I do know that applicators are required to fill out a form when they do a pesticide application that asks the time and the date of application, the ending time of the application, the EPA registration number, the number of units or acres or whatever that they treated. They often ask for if there's wind and the direction and speed of the wind. So there is information from the pesticide applicator's form that would be useful for a pesticide investigator if they were to ask for it. But this document really pretty much lays the cause of the mortality directly in the beekeeper's lap for this. I mean, that's the way it reads.
It seems as though you not only have to defend that you maintain good beekeeping practices, but you also have to do the footwork to provide the evidence, if you will, that the bees were exposed to a particular application. And not just give superficial, but give all sorts of, in my opinion, extraneous detailed information, which really should be the responsibility of the investigator as well as the applicator.
Yes, that's the way I would characterize it.
Jeff, I'd like to touch upon the enforcement language a bit, if we could. Language is generally divided into two categories, and that would be mandatory and advisory. And I've been told by beekeepers that they're very concerned that wherever there's a focus on the beekeepers, the directives are mandatory, but almost exclusively advisory when it comes to the pesticide applicators. Could you expand upon that a bit?
Well, I think where I would start with here, Tom, is EPA defines some terms and not others, and the bee industry is pretty perturbed about the lack of definitions like on our bee hazard statement. However, they put out a pesticide notice back in 2000, which talked about mandatory and advisory language. That was the intent of the notice, was to define that those two terms. And obviously, mandatory language uses imperative wording. You know, the do's, the do nots, the shall nots, and advisory wording on a label would be less imperative, non-imperative, I guess it would be the terms I would use. And, you know, a person may, you know, you may choose to do this, or for best results, wash your hands after handling this product or whatever. That's advice. And the interesting thing about this document is when it talks about, this is instruction to the investigator that we're talking about here in this guidance document. And when they instruct the investigator how to investigate what the beekeeper did, it's written in very imperative wording. You shall ask the beekeeper must have the pesticide label for the product miticide that they use or whatever. Whereas any of the, and we're talking specifically about this document right now, but when they talk about what the commercial spray applicator does, they use much softer, less imperative language.
I think the reason for that is because it assigns legal responsibility. When you use softer language, there's more, if you will, wiggle room to put the onus of the responsibility elsewhere.
I'd just like to comment on some of the conversations that I have with beekeepers almost daily, and these guidelines are just a part of that. But the beekeepers have the distinct feeling that they're being treated as the adversaries and the culprits in these incidents rather than the victims. And that's one of the things that comes through in these guidelines. They're directed at trying to assess the blame to the beekeeper with little emphasis on the law, really. We're talking about violations of the pesticide laws, and the EPA does not seem to have any strong intent to enforce those laws.
Thank you, Tom. Tom, I have one question, and this is for you. As a former inspector, what would you recommend be done as far as what the EPA should be doing as far as any guidelines that they're putting out?
Well, I think we should go back to the beginning, and we should do it the way we had hoped that it would be done. The beekeeper should be involved in the drafting of these guidelines. They should have a strong hand in it. And we should have discussed many of the things we've talked about this afternoon before these guidelines were ever released. And the distinct impression on the part of the beekeepers is this is something that's being done to them, not something being done for them. So my recommendation would be that we bring Darren Cox and his enforcement work group back into the issue, and we revisit these guidelines, because I think they're very faulty as they're written.
Well, for sure the bee industry needs to be involved in this, because bees are really a mystery to a lot of people that are unfamiliar with the physiology of how they work. And, I mean, this guidance document, in my opinion, is good evidence of that. Whoever wrote this document doesn't understand the physiology of how bees, you know, work. I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the things that really don't make sense in this guidance document. It talks about the application site and or the investigation of the site. They're referring to actually the bee yard where the bees are, and they talk about the fact that there should be some dead bees near the colony and whatever. They completely miss the point that the site is actually out in the field that got where the application took place. And it's almost like if there's a murder that occurs, you would run to the person's front steps to see if they're dead on the step. And if they're not dead on the step, then therefore a murder didn't occur. The intent of this document appears to try and believe that everything is like drifted onto a beehive or whatever, and they forget the fact that, you know, bees are, that most cases, the pesticide incident is caused from the contact out in the field on the actual bloom. One of the things that really bothers me as a commercial beekeeper is that EPA's state primacy partners have cited applicators for pesticide violations in their hive when they make a complaint of a pesticide kill. And this has really deterred a lot of reporting from actually occurring. And one of the ways to get around that is if you Google bee kill incidents, thankfully some of the other places other than state primacy partners actually will come to the top right now. And one that I want to draw your attention to is actually the National Pollinator Defense Fund, which is one of the organizations that I belong to. And National Pollinator Defense has talked with EPA about this issue of the lack of reporting, actually, reports getting up to federal EPA. And we have we know the information that they need in order for an incident to be to actually get into their database. And we've made that relatively painless. If you Google pollinatordefense.org, one of the options on our webpage there is to report a bee kill. And you can simply just fill in your name and your address, your telephone number and your email address, and our program director will contact you and actually walk you through the effort and collect the information needed for reporting an incident. And we found that to be effective so far. We started that just this spring. EPA has been taking our incidents. The other thing that's strange about this is that if you call a state lead agency or your state pesticide investigator, they're not required to pass that information on up to EPA, and they generally do not do that. And so in some respects, it's an exercise in futility to actually report an incident, and I think that was done with intent. But pollinatordefense.org and report a beagle is another option to get that information into the system.
The lack of a requirement for the states to report incidents that are reported to them has been an issue for at least 20 years, and the beekeepers have raised that issue repeatedly, and nothing has been done to change it.
Well, at least now, or hopefully as people listen to these shows, the information will get out there, and especially to any commercial beekeepers that are not connected to the different groups where they're trying to figure out what to do. Hopefully this will help at least give more direction than what's out there already. Jeff, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on the show today and to express your concerns as a commercial beekeeper to our audience about what you're experiencing, not only as a professional beekeeper, but what you're up against.
Thanks for the invitation, and I trust that somebody in your audience will have found it useful.
I'm sure they will, Jeff. Thank you.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Sawyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show.